Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. That's right, you are right here where we look back at the week that was and look forward to all eternity. That's right, it's conservative talk with an eternal perspective, and welcome to the broadcast. Let's start, as we always like to do, with some lighthearted news designed to lift your spirit. Dateline Gaza City, Gaza. Gaza City, Gaza, I said, as opposed to other cities in Gaza. A senior Hamas member was killed during an Israeli airstrike in Gaza. That's according to Hamas security forces. Just this past Saturday, an Israeli airstrike in central Gaza apparently has killed Syed al-Bitlan, who was responsible, allegedly, for manufacturing weapons. Was responsible for manufacturing weapons, according to Hamas. So it's not a legend. The Israelis got it right. The airstrike was part of a series of strikes that began late last Friday in retaliation for a rocket assault on Ashkelon, there in southern Israel. Now, a second rocket was fired from Gaza just this past Saturday night, slamming into the Israeli town of Sderot. No Israeli response has been initiated yet for that second rocket attack. That's according to CNN, and we're on the edges of our seats here, just waiting for that second attack from Israel upon the Hamas forces there in Gaza. So now that we all feel better, let's move on. To less happy news, an article this week from Investor's Business Daily caught my eye, and it talks about a second American Revolution. Flag the tape, he said second American Revolution, but it wasn't I who said it, it was the author at Investor's Business Daily. Investors tells us that the internet is a large-scale version of the committees of correspondence that led to the first American Revolution. And with Washington's failings now so obvious and awful, the internet and the conversations thereon may lead to yet another American Revolution. No doubt, the authors at Investors Business Daily are referring to the ever-popular blogosphere that is exposing the fancy and the ridiculousness of the ruling class and the things they're allowed to get away with. You know, just this week, this past week, I should say, Barry Ho was on stage. No, he wasn't on stage. I'm sorry. Well, I guess he was on a stage. He was on the soundstage at The View with, who is it on The View there? Joy Behar. And who's the other one? Babel Wolters. And some other, Whoopi Goldberg and others. Anyway, they asked him a question about Snooki, and Barry Ho said that he didn't know who Snooki was. And then within an hour, all over the blogosphere, you could find videotape of Barry Ho referring to Snooki during the White House Correspondents' Dinner. 2 months ago, 3 months ago. Maybe back in January. Anyway, now I have always considered it a mark of intelligence for anyone who does not know who Snooki is. I had to familiarize myself with Snooki, who apparently is the star of an MTV reality series entitled Jersey Shore. Now, I myself do not allow MTV into the house. Or is it my extremely attractive audio engineer who blocks that? She blocks it. And needless to say,
I watch you, right?
Yeah. No, I hope not.
I don't
Anyway, neither one of us know who Snooki is, and neither one of us have ever watched the Jersey Shore. In fact, has anyone here on staff ever watched Jersey Shore? Let me see a show of hands. And there are none. Nobody knows who Snooki is. Well, we didn't know. Now we do know. So if we were interviewed, or we were giving a speech, or we were being interrogated by Bob Walters, we would say, yes, we know who Snooki is. She's the fat orange girl on the MTV show. We've heard of her.
We saw,
that's right, she was on the news being arrested just as her the next season apparently launches, so she got drunk on the beach and got arrested, which apparently is par for the course for one Snooki of the Jersey Shore. But the thing is, as we look forward in the week to come, will Barry Ho, the leader of the ruling class, the emperor without the clothes, will he be called to task for lying about his knowledge of Snookiism? I think not. And so, indeed, we have entered a bizarre new segment of American history, and you and I are living right through it. Lord willing, for the moment, anyway. Well, now, let's get back to the Investor's Business Daily article. The authors say, Barack Obama, affectionately known here at the Worldview as Barry Ho, Barack Obama has, however, has pulled off the ultimate switcheroo. He's diminishing America from within, so far successfully. He may soon bankrupt the United States and replace our big merit-based capitalist economy with a small government-directed economy of his own design. He is undermining our constitutional traditions, the rule of law, and our Anglo-Saxon concepts of private property. Anglo-Saxon concepts of private property. Wait just a second here. Investor's Business Daily. Now, that's not known as a bastion of religious knowledge, but Anglo-Saxon concepts of private property? Let me just refer to my Bible really quick, because I think before the Anglo-Saxons were painting themselves blue in the hills and dales of England, if I'm not mistaken, if we go to Deuteronomy, which I am about to do, Warning, 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 Will Robinson. There are Bible verses up ahead for those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity. We know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would not tolerate anyone who would ever dare quote a Bible verse in public, so this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. From Deuteronomy in the 19th chapter and the 14th verse, God said, this is pre-Anglo-Saxon, God said, you shall not remove your neighbor's landmark, which the men of old have set, in your inheritance, which you will inherit in the land that the Lord your God is giving you to possess. So it seems to me that the fellows over at Investor's Business Daily may want to check in. It's not an Anglo-Saxon concept of private property, but it's a biblical. It's a Christian concept. Might I even say a Judeo-Christian concept of private property? But let's let that slide, because Investor's Business Daily, after all, the authors there are not known as theologians. So Barry Ho is undermining our traditions. The rule of law and our biblical concept of private property hang in the balance. Obama, according to Investor's Business Daily, may be the most consequential president ever. Now, that's scary to think about, that Barry Ho could be the most consequential president. We've had some pretty consequential guys in the office. George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Barack Hussein Obama. Oh, man, it hurts to even say it. All right. And by the way, Investors quotes one Senator Max Baucus, who was at a CEO, he was at a business roundtable recently, and was quoted, they say he blurted out that Obama is engineering the biggest government-forced redistribution of income in history. So that's Max Baucus saying it. I mean, that's like Hamas saying, yes, this guy makes bombs. This is Max Baucus saying, yes, Barry Ho is a socialist, a stone Marxist, engineering the biggest redistribution of income in history. Did I just say that? That was Max Baucus after he was loosened up by three or four drinks and started to tell the truth at the business roundtable. Anything else? This is very good. Now, the Investor's article encourages all of us to compare Obama's record to George Washington's wise farewell admonition. Listen to the words of George Washington as he was departing public life. George Washington warned the nascent American nation. He said, quote, "Cherish public credit. Use it as sparingly as possible, avoiding likewise the accumulation of debt. Bear in mind," said George Washington, "that towards the payment of debts there must be revenue, that to have revenue there must be taxes, and that no taxes can be devised which are not inconvenient and unpleasant," unquote. That was George Washington. And my guess is that's a speech that Barry Ho never read. Come to think of it, neither did John McCain or Bob Dole or any of the other members of the ruling class who are frankly destroying the country. And it's starting to get to me. It's starting to bother me. All right. Speaking of the rapid deterioration of the nation, of the union, as one might put it, from Reuters, more NATO troops, according to Reuters, actually this is according to a top U.S. military officer. Yeah, it was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen. He was visiting Afghanistan, and here's what Mike Mullen had to say. He said that more NATO troops will die in Afghanistan as violence mounts over the summer, but Washington's goal of turning the tide against the insurgency by year's end is within reach. So he basically says it's gonna get worse before it gets better. Now walk with me on this, friend. Is this the goal in the war now? To turn the tide against the insurgency by the end of the year? Is that the goal as held forth by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff? I mean, has the goal deteriorated to that? We just want to turn the tide. We don't want to defeat and destroy the enemy and leave them cowering in their caves and kill all of them, or as many as humanly possible, and then install a puppet government in Afghanistan who will be at our beck and call. We don't want to build a Western-style democracy in Afghanistan. We just want to turn the tide. I mean, if we could just start killing a few more of them and they could be killing a few less of us by the end of the year, apparently the chairman of the Joint Chiefs there would consider that we've met some kind of milestone in the war. And I'm sorry, folks. I mean, being a military veteran of sorts, I just cannot see how any politician can look himself in the mirror and send young men into combat to kill and be killed for the goal of turning the tide against the insurgency by year's end and hopefully meeting Barry's 18-month withdrawal date. I couldn't live with myself if that were me. But then again, I'm not a member of the ruling class that pulls the strings. The Reuters article also indicates that violence in Afghanistan is at its highest level in the 9 years of the Afghan war. 9 years. I pointed that out a couple of weeks ago. It's a little shocking to think that we've been at war in Afghanistan for 9 years. And let me quote, if I may, quickly. Now, this isn't scripture, but there's a book called The Art of War, written by a Chinese fellow named Sun Tzu. And he talks about long wars. And here's what Sun Tzu says. He says, there is no instance of a country having benefited from prolonged warfare. It is only the one who is thoroughly acquainted with the evils of war that can thoroughly understand the profitable way of carrying it on. The skillful soldier, says Sun Tzu, does not raise a second levy, neither are his supply wagons loaded more than twice. Unquote. So, have we benefited from the prolonged war in Afghanistan? Did we benefit from the prolonged war in Vietnam? Well, I would say no, we have not. And we should listen to Sun Tzu. Because, you see, people only have so much of a stomach for war, only so much of a stomach for the battle. And I would direct Sun Tzu's advice to the leaders of the pro-life movement, by the way, just in an ancillary fashion. They've allegedly been at war for over 40 years, what they call the culture war. And there are so many of us down here near the bottom, just the regular enlisted dog face types, who frankly can't stand much more of it. I'm Doug McBurney. This is the Weekly Worldview. So glad to have you aboard. Now, I don't want you to take what I said the wrong way. Don't think that that McBurney's losing the stomach for the battle, because that's not what I intended. I simply want to instruct our so-called and alleged leadership in the so-called culture wars that it's simply gone on long enough, and there needs to be a strategy devised for an end game, to provoke an ultimate conflict that results in the defeat of our enemy. We cannot simply raise money and elect candidates and then raise more money and then buy more advertisements and then raise more money and then buy a mansion and then raise more money and then make some radio commercials, endorse a book, and then raise more money. I mean, I'm sorry. We can't install radio talk show host after radio talk show host who seem to make a living off of what they consider the follies of the left. But the follies of the left, ladies and gentlemen, are killing people and taking us into what might be considered a brave new world, a terrifying new world. Dateline Washington, D.C. from LifeNews.com. The Obama administration has approved the bid by a cloning company, Geron, to undertake the first trial involving the use of embryonic stem cells in humans. They have never been used before in people, according to Life News, because the embryonic stem cells are documented to cause tumors. Tumors, I said. Scientists and pro-life advocates say human embryonic stem cells are not ready for trial because problems associated with the cells in animals haven't been solved. Now, here is a perfect example of the problem to which I just alluded. Here we have scientists and pro-life advocates who say that we shouldn't be using embryonic stem cells. Now, if scientists say we shouldn't be using them because embryonic stem cells are not ready for the trial because there are problems associated with tumors in past animal model tests, I would understand that. They're scientists. Probably a pack of heathens. Bunch of Darwinian heathens, right? But pro-life advocates are also, this is their tack on embryonic stem cell research, alleged pro-life leaders say that we shouldn't use them because they cause tumors. A note to pro-life leaders. Get the hell out. You're done. You're finished. You don't know what you're talking about anymore. We shouldn't be using embryonic stem cells because it involves the murder of innocent people. It involves the violation of God's enduring command, you shall not murder. If you any pro-life leader worth his salt would stand up and say that, but But, well, here's where we are. I apologize that I'm getting so upset. Try to calm me down. All right. Do I want to do more from this article? Because my blood pressure... Life News says that Garen, the cloning company, has proceeded with an early-stage trial on a stem cell therapy for acute spinal cord injury. The FDA placed a hold on that trial last August when the trial encountered safety issues, including a higher frequency of small cysts within the injury site in the spinal cord of animals injected with the cells of murdered human beings. Yeah. So what exactly do they do in these Frankensteinian experiments? According to the article, scientists inject cells derived from embryonic stem cells. In this case, a cell type called an oligodendrocyte. Yeah, I said oligodendrocyte. Look it up. It's a cell that forms a sheath around nerve fibers. And these cells are directly derived from embryonic stem cells and are actually not completely differentiated, but only part way. The theory, according to Frankenstein, is that once inside the body, these semi-differentiated cells will finish specializing into the final cell type and form an insulative covering over exposed nerves in the spinal cord. Now, that's the theory, is that if we butcher and eat little babies, that we'll be able to live longer or have a better of quality of life. That's it in a nutshell. Now, so far, the butchering and eating of innocent children has only led to tumors and cancer and no real therapeutic effect. But that's beside the point, because we're butchering and eating little baby children. For all you pro-life leaders out there and advocates, you may want to point this out. Really, really would appreciate your help on that. All right, now, let's move away from that. On to something a little, a story that the worldview, I must admit, we were the tip of the spear on this next story. Dateline New York, from the Associated Press, 400,000 New Yorkers battled bed bugs last year. Yeah. The blood-sucking pests, which are not known to spread disease but can cause great mental anguish with their persistent and fast-growing infestations, have rapidly multiplied throughout New York City and many other U.S. cities in recent years. Yes, bed bugs are on the march, and I think it's appropriate, since we as a civilization have decided to descend to the level of an ignorant caveman in butchering and then devouring baby children, I think it's appropriate that some of the afflictions of the Dark Ages are recompensed upon us. Pest control specialists, according to the Associated Press, report a nationwide surge in sightings, bites, and complaints. Sightings? It's like they're watching for UFOs or something. I mean, a bed bug sighting? Isn't that usually associated with a bite and a complaint? Maybe these were all part of the same survey. Sightings, bites, and complaints are up, surging nationwide, according to pest control experts. Now, according to the article, the stigma of having bed bugs and the elusive nature of the pests makes it impossible to fully understand the problem. That's what experts tell us. People are so ashamed to have bed bugs and to admit that it feels like they're living in the 14th century that they just don't want to tell anyone. Now, we have some quotes here. We have a quote from a deputy commissioner for environmental health. That sounds like a total patronage job. Somebody's cousin related to the mayor, that's how you get this job. The New York City deputy commissioner for environmental health. You show up like 2.5 days a week, and you just, I mean, what do you do? Anyway, Daniel Cass is the fellow's name. He says this bed bug insurgency is happening globally, and I don't think anybody has figured out exactly why. So there he is. Here's a fellow who's the deputy commissioner for environmental health. He says we don't know what's going on. He's obviously qualified for his semi-no-show job there in the bureaucracy of New York City. So nobody's figured it out. The AP closes the article reminding us that bed bugs were nearly dormant for decades, and the recent comeback has experts scratching their heads. And just their heads? Bed bugs usually strike below the neck. Anyway, it has experts scratching their heads. Some attribute the resurgence to an increase in global travel and the prohibition of potent pesticides like DDT. Now, there's an argument as to which is it. Is it the fact that we allow, how should I put this to be politically correct? Third world type people to fly into the country willy-nilly, bringing their, their luggage packed with bed bugs. Is that the problem? Or is it the prohibition of DDT? Now, I don't know if I've read articles that bed bugs had become fairly resistant to DDT. So the prohibition of DDT may not be the sole issue here with the bed bugs. Probably more the third world types. You know, the people who actually are still living in the 14th century who are bringing their bed bugs over. But one thing's for sure, mosquitoes had never displayed a resistance to DDT, and there are billions, maybe even trillions of mosquitoes who have lived rather than died, especially in Africa, after the prohibition of DDT, and hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of people killed by malaria and other blood-borne diseases carried by mosquitoes since DDT was prohibited. But we all feel a lot greener here in the West. Feel a lot better about ourselves. And so now the bed bugs have come home to roost. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on that story for sure. Now, let's move to our almost weekly medical marijuana update from the formerly great state of Colorado, from Denver. Here's a shocking bit of news. Nearly one in five medical marijuana dispensary owners in Colorado have criminal records. I know. Shocking. Yes. I'm sorry. A majority, more than one in five, more than 50% of medical marijuana dispensary owners in Colorado have criminal records, and nearly one in five have previous felony convictions. That's according to the DEA. And they did a study to figure that out. You could have just walked into any dispensary and just counted the tattoos on people's necks, and you would have been able to say, yeah, about 60% of them. Anyway, according to the assistant special agent in charge for the Denver Field Division of the DEA, he says this business of medical marijuana dispensaries seems to have an inappropriate number of people with criminal backgrounds involved as business owners. Now, these are people who may have never owned their own business before. So it's a real entrepreneurial boom out here in Colorado. The special agent at the DEA said, quote, "I would be hard-pressed to find any other business group where their members have so many criminal violations, arrests, and convictions." outside of Planned Parenthood, you know. But I don't want to get all serious on you here. Let's see. Oh, here we go. Brian Vicente, the executive director of Sensible Colorado, a marijuana advocacy group. Now, what is marijuana advocacy? I guess that means when he has a joint, he passes it on. He's a marijuana advocate. What did he have to say? The name of his group is Sensible Colorado. And they're all potheads. But they call themselves Sensible Colorado. You know, that's almost as funny as the people at Planned Parenthood who kill babies and they allege that they just want you to plan your parenthood. Anyway, so the So the Potheads at Sensible Colorado, do I have a quote from them? They said that the business owners have served their time for their offenses, and they should be left alone to dispense their medicine. He says they've paid their debt to society, and now they want to move on and work in this field.
Move on?
And work in this field? I mean, you're calling this a field? Like nuclear medicine? Like embryology? Like biology? I mean, those are fields.
He's a medical director, right?
He's a marijuana advocate.
He's not.
He's the guy, if you're standing next to him at a Rush concert, who'll pass you the joint. He's an advocate. No, he's not a medical director. Anyway, these people want to work in this field, this honorable field of medical marijuana. And so Colorado has come out now, and they've come out with an 80-page application for the medical marijuana dispensary owner to resubmit to make sure he's qualified. And what they're figuring is that most of the potheads won't be able to pay attention through all of 80 pages, and about half of the dispensaries are scheduled to close, but well, just due to a lack of focus.
I started a joke, which started the whole world crying. Oh, but I didn't see that the joke was on me. Started to cry, which started the whole world laughing. Oh, if I'd only seen that the joke was on me.
It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm Doug McBurney. And just in case the medical marijuana dealers were getting you down, just in case the New American Revolution had you concerned, perhaps the fact that the ruling class has started the first clinical trial involving the body parts of murdered fellow Americans. Just in case all that had you concerned, don't worry too much, because a giant asteroid is on its way to hit the Earth and cause massive devastation. According to The Sun, in England, an international team, including NASA experts, warned that a space rock about a third of a mile wide has been discovered heading this way, toward Earth. If it did hit Earth, according to reporters, it would blast a crater several miles wide and could devastate a city the size of London, wreaking death and destruction for hundreds of miles in every direction. Now, for those of you in the audience who are of the opinion that God is actively and supernaturally involved in the affairs of humans, keep in mind that this asteroid is still out there in space hurtling toward Earth. Meanwhile, the Chelsea Clinton wedding went on without a hitch. Now, if there was ever a time that the righteous Creator God was going to intervene in human history and let us all know that He's out there, it would have been at the Chelsea Clinton wedding. Have you seen the guest list? Consider this. You're the almighty, all-powerful Creator of the universe. Mankind is in utter rebellion against you, and the leaders of that rebellion are all gathered in upstate New York, and you have an asteroid floating out there in space. Is there ever a time when you would not hurl that meteor down upon those white tents and crush and burn and destroy all those hypocrites? But he did not do it. He did not. And that's because, well, he's got a different plan. He's not actively, supernaturally intervening in the affairs of man. And so Chelsea's wedding, I mean, there wasn't even a drop of rain, for crying out loud. All right. Back to the asteroid. If the asteroid does hit, it will most likely happen in the year 2182. Uh-oh. So that means all that other stuff, the war in Afghanistan, human embryonic stem cell research, medical marijuana. We do need to worry about all that stuff because, I mean, we can't go another, 170 years. So we have to engage and we have to do our best to try to educate our fellow citizens who are a pack of unwashed, ignorant heathens. So please try to do as much of that as you can as you go forward in your daily life. Let's see. Do we have anything more on the asteroid? The asteroid's orbit has been fairly well known thanks to 290 visual observations and 13 measurements using radar. The total impact probability is approximately 1 in 1,000. Okay. And the best chance, that 1 in 1,000 chance occurring in 2182. I guess in astronomical terms, 1 in 1,000 is fairly significant. Bill Cutlip of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center said this, quote, "This asteroid is a time capsule from before the birth of our solar system," unquote. That's someone from the Goddard Space Flight Center says that the asteroid obviously came from before the birth of our solar system. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's worse than we thought. Top scientists have bought into the old Earth flim-flam and are operating under it as if it were science. And that's just embarrassing for NASA and the Goddard Space Flight Center. I think it will be interesting. Didn't we just send a probe to an asteroid? Where are the results? I've been scanning the wires, waiting to see what kind of bizarre, otherworldly materials are found on that asteroid, because I have a feeling that they're going to find some kind of... Well, not otherworldly material, but they're going to find a bunch of stuff from Earth. And that's going to throw them all into a tizzy, and they'll be quite confused about science, life, the universe, origins, and everything else. No, wait a minute. They're already quite confused. They'll be further confused. Anyway, if for those of you in the audience, if you have not read, there's a book called In the Beginning by author Walt Brown. And you should read that book, because it's an incredibly well-done defense of biblical creationism and posits the theory that asteroids came from Earth during the Great Flood when the bowels of the Great Deep were broken up and the pressure flung rocks out into space and they're still spinning around out there and they have a tendency to come by Earth every now and again. In the Beginning by Walt Brown. Do check it out. All right, that was from the Real Science File. Now let's go. Oh, I'm sorry. That wasn't from the Real Science File. I'm about to read you an article from the Real Science File. The article on the giant asteroid was from the new file that we've developed here at the Weekly Worldview. It's the Science Really File. Yeah, the Science Really File. That was the asteroid. But in the Real Science File, everyone's been asking, where is all the oil? And I want to go on record. And I want every one of you to tell your neighbors that it was Doug McBurney in the Weekly Worldview who first posited the idea that the ecosystem in the Gulf was simply too massive and powerful to be destroyed or even significantly disrupted by the oil slick out there. As I thanked and praised God for the power and the awesome wonder of the ecosystem he created down there and thanked him that were it not for his wisdom, that the oil would have blackened the beaches for hundreds of miles. But I thank God for the ecosystem he created. And now when everyone's looking for the oil, we have an article from Yahoo News. Where's the oil? That's the title of the article. 2 weeks after BP finally capped the biggest oil spill in U.S. history, the oil slicks have largely disappeared. And why is it? Is it because Charles Darwin is swimming out around there, drinking up all the oil? Is Richard Dawkins out there in a skimmer? No. Here's what scientists say. So where did the oil go? Well, some of the oil evaporates. About 40% of the oil might have evaporated when it reached the surface. Pretty cool, huh? Some of the oil has sunk into the sediments of the ocean floor. But according to a report in the New York Times, federal scientists have determined that the oil is primarily sitting in the water column and not on the sea floor. Federal scientists? What is that? This is from Yahoo News. That's all they say, federal scientists. I guess we're all supposed to bow down on our knees and worship the word of the federal scientists. Well, there are a lot of people that disagree. Some researchers suspect that much of the oil has been devoured by microbes. Microbes, I said. The lesson from past spills is that the lion's share of the cleanup work is done by nature in the form of oil-eating bacteria and fungi. Yeah, fungi, I said. Yeah, that's great. A bit of oil in the water is like a feeding frenzy, causing microbial populations to grow exponentially as they eat the oil. Yeah. According to the article, even before humans started drilling for oil in the Gulf and spilling lots of it, oil naturally seeped into the water. As a result, the Gulf evolved a rich collection of petroleum-loving microbes ready to pounce on any new spill. Now, here's evolution I can believe in. I can believe that microbes, over the years, developed a taste for oil since there was plenty of it around. Now, they didn't evolve into, you know, the guy who wrote the musical Annie, but they did evolve the ability to eat oil. That's evolution you can believe in. let's see. The controversial dispersants that were used to break up the oil. You've heard the controversy about that. By the way, it was pretty much Dawn liquid. Yeah, I'm not kidding. It was pretty much Dawn liquid. You know the dish soap? That's what they were squirting in there. Pretty much. The dispersants may have helped the microbes do their work. Yeah. Microbes can more easily consume small drops of oil than big ones. And there is evidence that microbes like to munch on the dispersant as well. Praise the Lord for such biodiversity there in the Gulf. That's just awesome. All right. Now let's move on from the real science into the culture file. From Santa Ana, California, a bit of disturbing news. Televangelist Benny Hinn has posted a plea for $2 million in donations on his website. Benny says he accumulated the deficit over the past few months because he was buying houses, jewelry, and trying to pay off an ex-wife. No, that's not what he says. He says offerings at some international appearances did not cover expenses. He's one of six evangelists, by the way, who've been targeted by federal lawmakers investigating compliance with IRS rules. Well, that's the one thing we won't hold against Benny Hinn. You know, the fact that he's a liar and a charlatan and an embarrassment to the gospel of Jesus Christ, we will hold those things against him. But the fact that he's being investigated by the IRS, that's the only thing he's got going for him in my book. By the way, his wife filed for divorce back in February amid rumors that he's cheating with a fellow TBN televangelist, a woman, a huckster, a charlatan on par with Benny Hinn named Paula White. But we don't know that there's any truth to those allegations. We do know that after 30 years, his wife split, and he hasn't been able to heal her of her sickness of Benny Hinn. She's sick of Benny, and no matter how many hands Benny lays on her, she doesn't want him anywhere near her. All right, now back to the real science file. Here's some exciting news from England. A gel that can help decayed teeth grow back in just weeks may mean an end to tooth fillings. The gel is being developed by scientists in France who have felt so sorry for the British over the years that they've decided that something must be done. Now, These fine French scientists in lab studies, it took just 4 weeks to restore teeth back to their original healthy state. The gel contains melanocyte-stimulating hormone called MSH. It's called melanocyte-stimulating hormone, and apparently it'll help the British with their rather embarrassing dental problems. Let's see. Recent studies suggest that MSH may also play a crucial role in stimulating bone regeneration, which could help some of the Republicans and pro-life leaders in the America with their spinal columns that seem to have disappeared over the past 20 or 30 years, perhaps. Anyway, according to the article from the Daily Mail, tooth decay is a major public health problem in Britain. Well, that's stating the obvious. Isn't that the job of a journalist, to point out the obvious? All right. Do we have anything else on tooth decay and spinal decay? An estimated 1 in 5 Britons suffers from dental phobia. Yeah, that's a fear of dentists, which means some there in Britain would rather endure pain and suffering than face the prospect of having their teeth drilled. Yeah. And so maybe the French will have developed a gel that can help the British to not have to go see their dentist and still have decent teeth. But as far as we know, there is no cure for the spineless Republicans so far. It's the Weekly World View. We are rounding third and headed for home, and we're just about out of time, and I've got way too much news here that I've got to get to, so please pay attention and listen quickly. From the Justice File, Thomas Spiak once faced 315 years in prison for crimes against a teenage boy and then hiring a hitman to kill witnesses in the case, but he's going free at the age of 52 because a doctor said he's no longer likely to reoffend. So you've heard us here on the Weekly World View make fun of these sentences of 200 and 300 years. Well, here's a fellow who was sentenced to 315 years, charged with 29 crimes against a teenage boy and hiring a hitman to kill witnesses. He's been released after less than 20 years and is now a free man. His name, by the way, is Thomas Spiak. If you live anywhere in the Palm Bay, Florida area, you might want to take note of this. Spiak has informed the state of Florida that he'll take up residence in Orange County. And that address will be published on the sex offender registry. So they have the nerve to publish the address of the monster that they're loosing upon society. And they expect us to do nothing. And what do? We do nothing. We allow these monsters to live among us and prey on our children. How much longer are we going to tolerate this? All right. On to Edinburgh, Texas, from the Associated Press. A jury has sentenced a South Texas man after convicting him of capital murder for beheading his common-law wife's 3 children in 2003. John Allen Rubio was convicted of killing the children all under the age of 4 by smothering, stabbing, and ultimately decapitating them in a windowless Brownsville, Texas apartment. The judge asked Rubio, the killer, if there was anything he would like to say as the death sentence was passed. And he said, quote, "I'm sorry it all had to come to this," unquote. "I'm sorry it all had to come to this," he said. At various times since the crime, Rubio has claimed the children were possessed and that he was the chosen one intended to save the world. In the midst, I can't even read the rest of it. I can't do it. I can't even read what he. Phoenix, Arizona, from the Domestic Tranquility File. A shooting has left 3 people dead, 2 officers, 1 officer and 2 suspects killed, 2 other officers wounded in a gun battle last Wednesday night in Phoenix. Police did not disclose the details of the drug bust or what triggered the shootout. Well, I'll just bet it was the drug bust that triggered the shootout. The drug dealers, how about that? Oh, they didn't disclose that. That's just speculation on my part, but that's life in Phoenix. A gun battle. A running gun battle on a Wednesday night in the streets of Phoenix. More from the Domestic Tranquility File, an update on a story we did last week. A single mother who died in a mysterious fire with her four children committed suicide, and her teenage son's death was a homicide, apparently at her hands as well. You remember last week, police thought that the 15-year-old teenager had committed the crime, and as horrible as that is, it's even more horrible. It was the mother who killed all four of her children, killed herself, and set the home on fire and then killed herself. From the International Domestic Tranquility File, from Villarature, France, a 47-year-old woman was placed under official investigation for the suspected killing of eight newborn babies. The woman and her husband have been held in custody since the bodies were found wrapped in plastic bags on their property. The case could be the worst infanticide in France since what would you guess? Would you guess 50 years? Would you guess 100 years? Would you guess 20 years? Well, it's the worst infanticide in France since 2007. March of 2007, a 38-year-old woman was found to have killed six babies soon after their birth. That's the state of domestic tranquility here and overseas. Dateline San Antonio, a man walked into a house in an upscale gated community, pulled two handguns from a briefcase, and killed two men and a mother while their three children played in the backyard. He then shot himself to death. The gunman, according to the Associated Press, who has not been yet identified, may have coaxed the children to go play before opening fire on the adults inside the house. So, obviously not a hate crime here. I mean, he let the children go out and play. From the Justice File, I just don't care about that. From the Personhood File, backers of the personhood measure, according to the Boston Herald, backers are regrouping. That's their headline. Backers of personhood measure regroup. After a 3-1 defeat at the polls in 2008, personhood is back on the Colorado ballot. Fofi Mendez, who's director of the No on 62 campaign, she says, Amendment 62 is yet another sneaky attempt by a national organization to provide legal and constitutional rights to a fertilized egg in Colorado. So they're still on with the fertilized egg thing. You know, it's like allowing Barry Ho to say he doesn't know Snooki when we've got him on tape. He knew Snooki 3 months ago. And here we've got people who allegedly have an education calling an embryo a fertilized egg, yet no one calls them on it because we live in Wonderland and with Alice and the mushrooms and the distorted, all of that. That's where we're living. Nobody calls these people on it. And they also say that the leader of the Amendment 62 organization, Keith Mason, they say he's from outside Colorado and has worked nationally on the abortion issue. Now, I know that Mr. Mason has gone outside of Colorado to work against the killers of innocent people, but he's from Colorado, and the massive tentacles of their national organization are certainly something to behold when you go down to the worldwide headquarters of Personhood USA. It's amazing. I mean, up-armored vehicles surrounding the place, black Suburbans, helicopters overhead, satellite links. It's awesome. Tell you what. And in West Virginia, a pro-life organization called Personhood West Virginia has held their first meeting in Hampshire County with Personhood USA founder Cal Zastro, another out-of-state subversive working in the gargantuan organization known as Personhood USA. They probably have tentacles going into the White House, the Pentagon, you name it. And West Virginia, obviously. Cal Zastro was there. The amendment process in West Virginia will require the state legislators to vote on the proposed amendment language, and if passed, the public would have the opportunity to vote on the amendment, to vote it into law during the next election. So there's some good news ahead of the asteroid that so many of us so richly deserve. I should say so many of you. All of you out there who are against us, you deserve the asteroid. We'll go ahead and attach ourselves to the tentacles of the Monstrous Personhood USA organization. All right, from the politics file, Maxine Waters and Charles Rangel are facing, well, they could be facing trial on ethics charges. And here's how the Associated Press, here's what they report. They say that these trials of these two further complicate the election outlook for Democrats. So that's the takeaway message. Not that Maxine Waters and Charles Rangel could very well be criminals, but this could further complicate the election, and we know how complicated it's getting for the Democrats already, and here is another complication that we hate to report, but Maxine Waters and Charles Rangel have apparently been, well, they came to Washington to do good, and they've done very well indeed. Barry Ho appeared on The View. He said, look, I was trying to find a show that Michelle actually watches. And so I thought, this is it, right here. The View. I mean, that's got to be embarrassing for Michelle. To know, for people to know that that's as bad as Barry not being willing to admit that he watches Jersey Shore. Now he's outed Michelle as a consumer of The View. And that's got to knock 15 to 20 points off her perceived IQ out there amongst the masses. Barbara Walters asked Barry, in the last month, Barry, what has been the woes and what has been the thorn? And then Bret Michaels came back on stage with an acoustic guitar. Every rose has its thorn. And Barry started telling the story about how he and his girls took a walk on the beach. And just unbelievable. Can you tell me we're not living in bizarro world? Let's move on through the politics file quickly because we're almost out of time. Ousted Agriculture Department employee Shirley Sherrod says she is going to sue one Andrew Breitbart. Andrew Breitbart, who I believe is persona non grata everywhere. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, even the conservatives have thrown Breitbart under the bus so fast. I mean, it's as if the guy doesn't exist anymore. It's unbelievable. Now, I didn't speak much on this because I just hate the whole, this idea of stories that are obviously concocted to generate some kind of racial reaction. It doesn't interest me. But when I watched the original video of Shirley Sherrod telling her story, I noticed that it was the audience going, yeah, girl, uh-huh, you tell her, uh-huh, yeah. She said, I didn't want to help the white farmer. You go, girl, that's right, uh-huh. That's what I noticed, you know. And I thought that her story that she was telling, I thought this sounds like a typical bureaucrat, black or white. They have any shred of power or any authority over any normal person. And they lord it over you. And anyway, the exculpatory statements about Sherrod saying that she eventually realized it wasn't about black and white. I mean, those exculpatory statements were in the original piece. I don't know how people missed all that. And by the way, she said it's not about black and white. It's about rich and poor. It's about the haves and the have-nots. So she was not revealing herself as a racist, but as a stone Marxist. Which I happen to notice. Anyway, I want to let Andrew Breitbart know that this is possibly the only show that you'll ever be asked to come on, and I don't typically have guests, but I would allow you to come on the show and explain yourself. Oh, what's that? He went on Michael Savage and did a whole hour, and it's as if it never happened. Michael Savage is the original persona non grata in the talk radio and in the blogosphere. All right, so we're let's see. Couple more things here quickly. From the politics file, actor Andy Griffith. Do you remember Andy Griffith? The Andy Griffith Show. I can't whistle. All of that, right? The Andy Griffith Show, Opie, all of that. Well, Andy Griffith has a new gig. He's pitching President Barack Obama's health care law to seniors in a cable television ad paid for by Medicare. Andy Griffith has been sucked in and is now compromised. He tells seniors in the ad that good things are coming with the Obama health care plan. Don't you worry out there. Grab your fishing pole. Good things are coming. Medicare says that the national ad is not political. It's an outreach plan to educate seniors about all the new benefits that seniors will get to enjoy before they get to the death panel. Lots of good stuff coming. And then at the end, we'll make it easy for you. We'll make it real easy for you at the end. Go grab a can of worms, Opie. Let's go fishing. All right. Let's see here. One more from the culture file. Oh, this is just sad. A 14-year-old Florida boy allegedly assaulted a man last Monday night in what police say was a racially motivated attack. The teenager was arrested after he allegedly declared, quote, "White people shouldn't be listening to rap music," and then struck a 22-year-old white man in the face. The white man was allegedly listening to rap music, and this offended the 14-year-old Florida boy. I mean, what happened to post-racial America? I mean, what happened here? Now, I agree with this young black fellow that white people should not be listening to rap music. But I think black people shouldn't be listening to rap music. I don't think anybody should be listening to rap music. I think, you know, like watching The View or Jersey Shore, it lowers one's IQ, but I certainly wouldn't resort to violence in trying to prevent anyone black or white from lowering their IQ. The teacher, according to the article, the attacker gave a fake name when he was initially approached by the police, but was later identified by his mother, whom he no doubts, well, he's 14, so he should be living with his mother. All right, that's it. I got nothing else. Okay, so it's either the asteroid or tune in next week, okay? I want to thank my friends at KGOV, at Denver Bible Church, and at Personhood USA in Personhood, Colorado. And, of course, I want to thank my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I will be back with you next week, Lord willing. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.